House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Welcome, everyone. We are missing a few people, but that's because of some sort of unfortunate wreck on 205. And then Representative Lindsay will not be here. But we're ready to proceed. Patrick, just a second. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1544A. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1544A comes through the Senate on a Senate floor vote of 29-0. Sorry, and my chambers crossed. This measure exempts the City of Redmond from statewide land use planning goals related to transportation planning administrative rules that implement the goal with respect to the development of a Southeast Redmond employment site adjacent to the Redmond Airport. This measure has no fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and we have no amendments before us, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, which one of you would like to, the Senator, welcome.
Well, good morning. I'm Chris Telfer, the Senator from sunny Central Oregon. And co-chairs and members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. Let me give you a little background on 1544. The site was 465 acres just northeast of the Redmond Airport. It is within the city limits, and it was originally industrial, zoned industrial. And there was a time period where the Deschutes Fairgrounds contemplated moving to that site, and so they rezoned it open space. The fairgrounds decided to move to the south end of the airport, and so the City of Redmond has been trying to rezone it back to industrial, and for 12 years they've been attempting this. In the interim between being industrial site zoning originally, along came TPR. And so this bill is to fast-track that more or less as a pilot and let it be rezoned back to industrial land. It is a great opportunity for the City of Redmond and as well as Central Oregon to develop some land that will definitely create some economic development opportunities and jobs, knowing that Deschutes County and its neighbor Crook County have the highest unemployment in the state and have for some time. I will say that this has been a very collaborative effort in bringing this legislation to you. It's been a combination of the City of Redmond, DLCD, ODOT, Thousand Friends, Land Watch, Economic Development for Central Oregon, the Governor's Office, and Senator Beyer and myself have worked together, all of us, on this, and so that everybody's in agreement of what the bill says. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to the good Representative Wisnant to continue the discussion. We do have a number of people here to testify, maybe on some details and specifics that you might ask, but we're open to questions, all of which the representative will answer.
Good morning, colleagues, co-chairs. Thank you for hearing this bill. I'll be very brief because it is a great example of bipartisan work and cooperative cooperation of all the stakeholders led by Senator Barnes, Senator Telfer, and Mayor Endicott. Representative Gene was in House District 53.
Thank you.
Chair. It's good the Senate's learned how to handle tough issues like this when they get it through so they can bring it over. The House does this a lot. It is important. We shouldn't make fun of this. It's very important to our area, and we appreciate and urge you very much to have a work session and pass this bill out. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions for this panel?
Are we going to have others? Do we have a bunch of people?
I think we do.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Representative. And with that, should we take these as panels?
I think that would be perfect. Okay, I would start with the mayor.
Right. Mr. Mayor George Endicott, Mary Kay McCurdy, and Jonathan
Manton.
If the three of you could come up, that would be good.
Okay. Morning.
Mr. Mayor, if you would go first, that would be good.
Good morning. Co-chairs Benson Hunt and committee members, thank you very much. Senator Telfer stole my thunder. She said everything I was going to say. However, I'll add a couple of things about what makes a site unique. As she pointed out, it's in the city limits. It is currently served by water and sewer. It really has no economic value in its current situation. Senator Beyer and Senator Starr both came over to see this property, and I pointed out to them the high-value agricultural land, and as Senator Starr put it, it's very good at growing rocks and serves not much other purpose. It is in the city limits, has been for a long time. I think one of the real values of that property is it's publicly owned by Deschutes County, by the Central Oregon Irrigation District, and by the school district. And one of the advantages in working with those public bodies is that they can hold the land for longer, you know, to wait for a good large lot industrial opportunity to come along. When you have a private owner, you know, they want to turn the property and make a profit, and public agencies are willing to be more patient with that. So to my way of thinking, this is a very good opportunity. It will give us a chance to have some great economic growth in the entire Central Oregon area, and in fact might be, as we have been able to try and discern, the largest contiguous piece of industrial property in the state once if and when it gets rezoned. So thank you for your time. Do you have any questions of me?
We may, but unless you're going to jump in your car and drive back to Redmond right now, we'll have you wait for the other two. Is that a...
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
I will wait patiently. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Go ahead.
Mr. Co-Chairs, for the record, my name is Jonathan Manton. Today, on behalf of Central Oregon Land Watch. Central Oregon Land Watch is a nonprofit located in Bend. We perform a number of kind of watchdog functions for land use issues in Central Oregon, primarily. A lot of education role, some direct advocacy, as I'm doing today, and we're in necessary litigation. A little background, I originally testified the very first time we had this hearing over on the Senate side with the first draft of the bill in opposition, saying, wow, wait a second, we just finished a one-year process for the transportation planning rule amendments, and here we are only a month into that proposing an exception to that one-year process. But that was the first we had heard of this issue. So we asked to be included in a meeting with Senator Telfer and Senator Beyer to learn more about the specifics of the project and what exactly was going on. And so I just want to thank those two senators for including us in that meeting, so we could learn a little bit more about the specific kind of unique quality of and nature of this particular piece of land and why this bill was, in fact, necessary. It's a perfect site for industrial development. It's inside the UGB, and as we were included in the process and able to kind of learn more about it, you know, fully support this proposal with the understanding that it's unique and that a light industrial use is going to take place here. So just appreciate the collaborative process, appreciate being included, and am happy to testify in support of this bill today and wish the folks in Redmond good luck in bringing some jobs to the area.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Bence and Hunt and members of the committee. Mary Kyle McCurdy representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I too would like to start out by thanking Senators Telfer and Beyer for providing us the opportunity to give input on this bill as it went through the Senate. We also agreed that this site is an excellent one for industrial development. As you've heard, it's 465 acres. It's inside an urban growth boundary, and it's adjacent or near the Redmond Airport and Highway 97. And that's why this site is really irreplaceable and why it's of state interest. There's state investment in that infrastructure, and we're not going to replicate that infrastructure elsewhere in Central Oregon or anywhere next to an airport near a state highway. And because of that, we are concerned that the site actually be planned and zoned for industrial development. This bill, therefore, requires that the City of Redmond develop an overlay zone for this site. We would have liked it if this bill had put some framework into framework language into the bill that would guide the industrial zoning and planning of this site. But that's left for a later task, and we look forward to being involved in that development of that overlay zone to ensure, as Mayor Endicott has said, that this site really is preserved and used for industrial development for Central Oregon and really for the residents of the entire state because of those state investments that have been made that make this site particularly unique. So we look forward to continuing the collaborative process that's led to this bill in developing that overlay and seeing this site used for industrial development. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative. Jonathan or either, what would be the typical, I have the same reaction as you. You know, we had, I forget which one, which I think it actually related to 205, was it 205 last session, or was another bill brought by another member who I like, and I had the same sort of set of questions that I have now, which is, are we going to be doing these bill by bill? Let's say we didn't have this short session right now. What would have been the process we would have gone through, and why aren't we going through that process?
You know, Mayor Kyle may actually be better to answer that question than I.
Co-chairs, Representative Reed, I mean Smith. Sorry.
Get confused all the time.
I'm not familiar with the bill from last year to which, or last session to which you referred, but I will say that I think this site illustrates well why the amendments were made to the transportation planning rule and the Oregon Highway Plan that you may hear about if the state agencies testify on this bill, because it is designed or it will be designated for industrial use, which generates less traffic on things like state highways than, say, commercial or retail development. And therefore, those the Transportation Plan Rule and Oregon Highway Plan were amended to address those kinds of issues. And that's appropriate that those agencies did that at your direction after the last session. We actually, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, don't believe we necessarily need a bill to take the next step to ensure that this land is actually zoned for industrial use. We hope that we don't have to do that on a site-by-site basis around the state. It's one of the reasons that the legislature passed Senate Bill 766 in the last session that we were very closely involved with to make it easier to site industrial uses on land zoned for industrial purposes. So I hope you don't actually see another bill like this and that we figure out how to do this without coming to the legislature, if that's answering your question.
So I share the same hope, okay? And I mean, you know, two sessions ago was embroiled in a session-long discussion about water in eastern Oregon with essentially the same thing. Do we go through a set of processes that impact the whole state, or if we have a couple of members who recognize a significant challenge, see the lever to pull and start pulling on that lever, is that how we sort of set statewide policy? And it, sometimes it might be. In your mind, why do we need a bill in this instance rather than going using the transportation planning rule, going through a normal process?
Representative Smith, I'm not sure I'm the one to answer why we need it. I'm not sure we do, but we have also stated in our testimony that we look forward to working with this bill and with the regional, the City of Redmond and Deschutes County and the Economic Development Agency and that to make this work on the ground. I think Mayor Endicott would like to answer that question.
I'll just speak quickly too, since the question was asked of me. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs and Representative Smith. Because there are some unique qualities to this land, which we discussed in several meetings. And I think Mary Endicott can address that. But we were careful to have this discussion on the Senate side as well with the co-chairs of that committee and around our concerns about this piecemeal approach, and the conversation there was that because there are so many unique features to this particular piece of property, this legislation is necessary, and they were not interested in pursuing other, similar legislation for similar properties. And so that's what helped us get to a point of supporting this, was that we are comfortable that this is just a one-time kind of situation. But Mayor Endicott can speak to the exact reason why the technicality of the TPR doesn't apply here.
Thank you, co-chairs and Representative Smith. A couple of items about this. We've already lost three opportunities on this property because we weren't able to rezone it back to industrial. We tried in 2000, and we tried again in 2007. I know that the TPR amendments have gone through. There's a potential that a piece of Chapter 11 might apply to this in the new TPR amendments, but there's no guarantee it will. And one of the things that we've agreed to do in as we go through this process is we get the land rezoned, but we're also working with both DLCD and ODOT to take a look at still going through that TPR process to see if in fact it would work on a piece of property similar to this. The problem is that we have some potential investment there, and it will take, as I've heard, at least a year to go through that process, so the chances are we lose one more opportunity going to other states. And so it is a unique piece of property. It's also a unique bill that part of the concerns of my friends to my right here expressed was that this would not be the original idea was a process document. It has been turned into a unique document that will apply to this land only. I hope that answers your question.
It is certainly an answer, and I appreciate it. And let me say, I appreciate the need to justification for each of us working to get through processes when those processes stall for the benefit of our districts, and definitely see the need to work on economic development. It's why we worked on public building retrofits. It's why we worked on the Grow Oregon. One of the reasons I worry about us moving in haste is because I have a question about some language, and I made a mistake of yesterday of reading a bill too deeply and seeing if the wording worked. But I hope to draw your attention to section 1 sub 3. And I worry that either the or is meant to be an and if it's not, then there is a, I think that a lot turns on that. So it says, if the city adopts changes authorized by subsection 2 of this section, A, the city shall adopt a zoning designation or zoning overlay that restricts retail commercial activities allowed on the site to activities that, okay, three options. A, are necessary to support the planned employment uses. B, are not large-scale retail commercial uses, as that term is used in the land use regulations. Or C, help contain overall trips within the site. So it seems to me, are we allowing that zoning change if any of those three things are true, if we think it's necessary for employment uses, even if it does not contain overall trips, even if it does include large-scale retail commercial, not industrial, are we saying that we allow for that zoning change if it is not large-scale retail commercial, even if it has nothing to do with necessary planned employment uses, and even if it increases overall trips in the site? And I worry that allowing for any of those three rather than all of those three is significant choice. And maybe it's an intentional choice, maybe it's a mistake, but if it's an intentional choice, it's the kind of thing that I don't see in most bills most times. I wouldn't catch it most times. And the kind of thing that makes me nervous about doing, site by site, what I don't know what else I might have missed, but site by site land use rules, and then oops, we just changed law in a significant way that we might or might not have intended to do.
Co-chairs, Representative Smith, I will actually ask those who follow us to address the specifics there, either ODOT or DLCD, but I do want to say that the intent of the bill is that one of the problems we have in Redmond is the east-west connection. We have a railroad and a major highway that intersect our town, bisect our town. And the idea here is to keep as many trips, contain them to that site as we possibly can. So as folks are working there, they have somewhere to go eat lunch, for example. They don't have to try and traverse town to get there. Whether it's an or and, I'm not sure, and I hope someone following me can address that. But the intent is certainly to support industrial. The only reason we would have any commercial there is an ancillary use, not a primary use. There are no big large lot or big boxes allowed in that property. So the whole idea is that any commercial retail you see there is only to support what's going on that property or to minimize crosstown trips. That, again, the idea is to keep stress off the state highways.
Okay. I may have other questions, but I'll stop bothering you now.
Okay.
Yes, Co-Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This bill uses a term that maybe in statute elsewhere that I'm just not familiar with, the term strategic economic site of statewide strategic economic development importance. You know, I'm well familiar. We've got in statute defined transportation projects of statewide significance, and that kind of allows a special prioritization and focus on those. We have designated, obviously, enterprise zones around the state, and then you can decide what tax breaks may be eligible for businesses in those areas, or should you apply prevailing wage or not to those areas. I mean, you've got a variety of things. Is this a new category, or is there an existing category of other sites of statewide strategic economic development importance? Cries out for an acronym, too. It just seems like with all those words. But.
Co-chairs and Representative Hunt. Actually, that was a term that I think Senator Beyer came up with, given he chairs a counterpart body on the Senate. And when he looked at this property, he thought about 465 acres of contiguous industrial property in an area of high unemployment with access to some of the facilities you've heard about. So I think the concept here was that it is unique. It's in the city limits. It's already served by the utilities that we talked about. So for all those reasons, it is why he came up with that term. I don't know that it has a definition in other than what we're now creating, but I know that that was a term he used when he saw the property, and he said this would be of statewide economic development interest. So that's where I know the term came from. I don't know otherwise.
Mr. Chair, I believe the original version of this bill actually created a designation for this in statutory language, whereas I think the current bill just refers to it in a whereas clause as a project of statewide economic development significance, so it probably has less import than it did in the original version of the bill.
Co-Chair Hunt, we were concerned about some of the new terms that were in the original bill. This is one of them. Traded sector employment was another. And we've suggested using terms that already exist in state law and in Senate Bill 766 from the last session. There is the term, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not sure I'm going to get it exactly right, but industrial sites of significant regional significance, something along those lines. But it's from Senate Bill 766. And if the term you're referring to is just in the whereases, that may provide the opportunity to link it with an existing definition. I'm certainly not your legislative counsel, so I don't want to tell you how that will all work, obviously. But there are definitions in Senate Bill 766 that are very similar to the concepts that are in this bill.
Further questions? I have a couple. So, Mr. Mayor, you mentioned that because of the delay in moving this planning process forward, the city has missed and the state has missed the opportunity for some sort of development. Can you share with us the volume of jobs that we've lost and over what period of time we haven't had them, in your estimation? And I know it's a rough guess, but let's hear it.
Co-chairs and Representative Vance, I'm sorry I don't have the numbers in front of me. I know that we had three significant opportunities. You know, a lot of times when these site selectors come in, you don't know who the company is. They won't tell you, and they give a code name, you know, chocolate chip or something like that, and so you have no idea who it might be.
Hershey's.
Yes, sir. And in fact, there are some code names right now that are being used in Prineville for some of the data centers, and we have no idea who the owners are, but they've given them a code name. And so we can't really tell And would we have gotten them? We don't know. I mean, I have to say that we lost the opportunity. We didn't necessarily. It was not a sure thing, certainly, but we had no chance as opposed to some chance to be able to compete. In some cases, hundreds of jobs. We have one right now that there's another bill working its way through the Senate that potentially could bring 600 to 1,000 jobs to Redmond with another company that might very well site on this property, in fact. That one has been in the papers, called MVM Technologies, and they make a new technology printer cartridges.
What I'm most interested in understanding is the cost of the delay that the process imposes upon all of us. And that seems to be lost just because the opportunity is not necessarily measurable at the time it presents. So your estimate of what we've lost would be of great interest, because something would have happened but for this rule. I'm not sure what, and having a measure of it would be interesting. So we'll set that aside, and let's go to the next question. And it is at the end of the bill on page 3, paragraph E. It says if you can't get to agreement with ODOT, and we're going to hear from ODOT here in a few minutes, so I'm assuming you will get to agreement with ODOT, and you can comment on my assumption, but I'm assuming you'll get to an agreement. But if you don't, it says that the city shall construct mitigation described in the planned update. I don't know what that is, but I assume it has something to do with roads. Does the city have the money to do this, or is the agreement pretty essential to achieving what you're trying to do?
Well, of course, we haven't done the transportation impact analysis yet, but we have done prior ones, and we're pretty well convinced that there's a piece of road, and it's on, I think, one of the maps you might have gotten electronically or was sent over from Redmond yesterday electronically, that shows a 9th Street corridor that's adjacent to this property that dead ends at Highway 126, which is the one that links to Highway 97. You heard referred to the major north-south highway through Central Oregon. And if we continue 9th Street, which is the mitigation road that we're talking about, it's approximately $3 million. It is a priority on our capital improvement plan. We do plan on building it in the next few years to support this property. It then links to a major intersection on the south edge of Redmond called the U Avenue Interchange, and that at capacity right now, it's only at 50% capacity. So any of the trips coming off of this that are southbound, our plan is that they would pursue that 9th Street corridor to move south and take pressure off of the 97 intersection, which is closest to this. So it would be used for northbound traffic, but our plan is to encourage traffic to go south on this new corridor, which would relieve pressure on that intersection, because as we know, left turn lanes are the toughest, and those are the ones we want to take off of that intersection.
Yeah, thank you for that. What I'm trying to understand is that the consequences of not reaching agreement, and indeed, if the agreement is not reached, will the opportunity for this large employer still be maintained, I guess?
It's my understanding, yes, and we will build that corridor in any case. I mean, that is our plan, and we do have it in our capital improvement plan. And I mean, you know, we're setting the money aside right now. So do we have it in pocket? No. Will we? Yes.
Maybe I'll say this another way. How much pressure should we put on ODOT to make sure they get to agreement? Let me put it that way.
Well, I have to say that Redmond has a very long history of cooperation with ODOT. I hope you'll hear that when they get up to speak. That's certainly my understanding. And I have every... I'm convinced we will get to an agreement. I think Director Garrett has a personal interest in this. I know the OTC, there are several bodies watching this, obviously, because of the recent TPR amendments. And so I'm pretty well convinced we will have an agreement. I'm not worried about that, if you want the truth.
No, I do want the truth.
No, I'm hoping so.
Lie to us.
Too many obvious responses to that, so I'll just move on. Any other questions for this panel? Seeing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, and so we have Jerry and Bob and Doug.
Oh,
and
Bob and Matt.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Maybe,
oops.
Maybe when we do those three.
Oh, good idea. Jerry, Bob, and Matt. Is that Matt?
Yeah.
And we'll leave Doug to last. So, Jerry, since you're the one that's going to endure all of the pressure, you can go first.
Thank you. Good morning, co-chairs, committee members. For the record, my name is Jerry Bohart. I'm the Interim Deputy Director of Operations for the Oregon Department of Transportation. I think you've heard the stage has really been set for the parcel that we're talking about, so I think I will just kind of dive into the transportation issues, and I think that was certainly raised by Senator Telfer. We recognize that was one of the issues that was there. I think if you look, however, the language that's in the bill, where we've really worked collaboratively, I think you've heard this from everybody, but with our sister agency and with the city as well, there's an agreement between the department and the city to plan for transportation improvements appropriate to address the amount and the type of traffic from this employment site. We're basing it, so some of the differences, it's not just the changes in the transportation planning rule, but also some of the changes that have occurred within the agency. It's we're basing it on practical design principles, and we're basing it based on existing and reasonably expected future planned transportation resources, so getting to some of the resource concerns. And then we also acknowledge that it may not meet the mobility standards, and that's also one of the changes in the Oregon Highway Plan that we've worked on. And that we may not be able to address all the traffic attributable to the site. So there are things in play that I think that will allow us to get to the agreement that has been referenced. So we believe that Senate Bill 1544A engrossed allows the City of Redmond to complete the rezoning process for the Southeast Redmond employment site, and the department will work with the city to identify the transportation improvements needed to address the effects of the site's development. So I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Let's go through the rest of the panel first.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation Development, and with me is Matt Krall. You have a letter before you. The department has worked closely with ODOT and with the city in improving this legislation and in trying to get to some of the issues that came up with the original bill. While we don't have a position on the bill itself, we certainly agree that there are some very unique characteristics to this site that would merit a special attention, and the economic development opportunities that are likely to come about are certainly opportunities that we also support. We also wanted to let you know, this is really the first opportunity to let you know that in response to legislation last session, Senate Bill 795, taking over a year, working closely with ODOT, that the Land Conservation Development Commission did make some substantial amendments to the transportation planning rules that are subject to this bill. We've attached to our testimony a summary of those amendments. Matt Krall here has put a substantial chunk of his life into those amendments. I think they are very much what you had asked us to do, and those amendments go a long way to taking care of many situations that might be similar to this, nothing exactly like this, as again, this is a unique situation. So just as an aside, I think we have accomplished a lot in the last year towards addressing the kind of concerns that led to this bill. Obviously, with statewide legislation, you can't take care of every single situation. There's always something that's unique, and there needs to be a way to address those circumstances as well. I think that's what this bill represents. So I'm not going to say more, but I'll be happy to answer questions. And Matt also here has many of the answers you may be seeking about the unique features of this bill.
Thank you, Bob. Matt?
Just here to help answer questions.
Questions for this panel?
I'll take it from any panel, but to help me with the language in Section 1, Sub 3, referring to Sub 2, which says the city may adopt changes to the comprehensive plan without determining whether the change will have a significant effect on planned transportation facilities. So that seems important. I'd actually have questions even if ODOT, if the ODOT sections are still applicable given that language. But then it goes on to the thing that, anything that confuses me. If the city adopts changes, they will do the zoning for commercial activities allowed on the site to activities that are necessary or are not large scale or help contain overall trips. Is it really our intent that only one of those three things has to be true so that if it helps contain overall trips, but it is large scale commercial, or if it is not necessary, but it happens to not be large scale commercial, any of those things are true, then that this bill essentially just gives a green light to make changes to the Redmond Comprehensive Plan.
Mr. Chair, Senator Smith, I believe the intent here, and again, we're, you know, there's many ways to interpret legislation. Our understanding of this was that for that large site, the activities that the city would be allowing would restrict retail commercial, that they would not be large scale, and that there will be provisions to help contain overall trips within the site, that all three of those things would be occurring. I understand, I think your question is, if you look at this with a microscope, I guess one way to interpret it might be you only have to do one or the other.
Microscope.
And I don't think that was the intent. I don't believe that was what I don't think that's the city's intent. I think the way to read this is that they will try to maintain all three of those things.
Follow up?
Please.
If that's true, I don't think it's a microscope. Mm-hmm. I think the difference between or and is significant, and you're not a small change. And it's hard for me to read that to say what you said it meant.
Yeah, I'm just describing what our intent was and recommending that the city make changes. I see the concern. I can't say whether the city directly intended to insert an or rather than an and. I don't think that's what happened. I don't know whether this is probably a case of we're not having enough attention to drafting. I'm just saying what our intent was with that wording.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, so I mean, I guess it raised a couple concerns for me. One, the smaller one is, well, maybe we have an up. Maybe I'm reading it wrong, right? I mean, I raise it for target practice in case I'm just dense, which I've been before. So maybe it's just a little error. The second layer of concern I have is if there are things in when we do site-by-site land use lawmaking, it does make me nervous that we're doing, you know, that we might move hastily and do things we didn't recognize we were doing, right? And that's my bigger concern, why this is, while I support it, from everything I can tell from this project, sounds like a really valuable thing, it makes me a little nervous and I haven't talked to anybody about this prior, I don't mean to sandbag anybody, but I do have some I do have some concerns about doing this, as I have in a similar bill in the past.
Please.
Chair Vance and Representative Smith, Matt Kroll with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I believe that in all of our discussions with the city, it has been very clear that the intent is to limit retail, and that they are very interested in limiting retail only to those things that help the transportation system by cutting off those trips. So I'm confident as we work with the city that is the kind of overlay and zoning that they're going to be providing for us on that.
Jerry Bohard with ODOT. And just to kind of reiterate, I also think that the intent is there, but also when you go to the looking at a transportation impact analysis that they've committed to do and working with the agreement with ODOT as to the transportation impacts, clearly we're going to have to know what the intent is of A, B, and C in order to scope the TIA and in order to reach the agreement. So whether it's an or and, I think that there's, and the intent, we all as staff concur as to what the intent of the city was. I think there is, however, protection in the fact that the commitment to do a TIA and to do a commitment of agreement with ODOT. So we have to understand what the transportation impacts are. So we need to know what the proposed land uses are going to be in order to assess those.
So maybe there's a section of the bill you want to point me to that makes sure that what you, the second part of what you just said, trumps this. I will say nothing any of us say, nothing anybody says on the record here or up here in our terms or intent trumps the plain language of the statute, right? And I could say I intend by this to pass, you know, additional blank in the bills I care most about. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean it goes in there. Just be, even if I get everybody to agree that that's the intent, right? I want to retrofit a bunch more buildings. I want to, you know, do a bunch more sort of grow organ investments. But, you know.
Co-Chair Bentz, Representative Smith, I think if you look at 4-A, the city and the department must negotiate and enter an agreement required by this section within 6 months after the city completes the plan to update of the traffic impact analysis. And if you go to A, identify and list the plan transportation improvements and contain a description of the anticipated timing and financial responsibility. In order to do a TIA, you have to understand what the land uses and what the proposed traffic generation is going to be. So
we still have that protection. And so that's a thing. That's helpful or hurtful, depending. But I don't think resolve the other question, which I still have the question. I would love somebody to, I'll stop saying it now, but I would love somebody to offer their view if I'm reading it wrong.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, I don't think you are reading it wrong, although I think there's one additional permutation. Because at the end of A, there's a semicolon not followed by a word either or and, it can be interpreted to mean A plus B or C. Now, all that nitpicking aside, having spent quite a bit of time on land use planning and zoning issues, these words do matter. They matter a whole lot. I don't want this bill to go sideways. If there were a way for us to just sort of scribble a fix in up here and take care of it, that would be fine. It's not that simple to just scribble in a fix because that's what everyone understands and wants it to be. We have all the parties seeming to agree, whether it's land use advocates, the city, or the executive branch, agreeing what the intent was. It was supposed to be ands between all those things. Those three criteria must be met. Everyone seems to agree. That's not what it says. However, the things that I think provide a little bit of safeguard are, for example, the specificity of the location to which this applies. It's not going to be used as a template, I don't think, for legislation that applies to dozens of other cities around the state for other exceptions or special attention. And also, on page 3, line 33, this act is repealed on January 2nd, 2015. So it's not only specific to a place, it's specific to a point in time, and then this goes away. So if there's not a way to fix it easily, I think it's okay. I'm somewhat comforted by that. I sure wish it had been written more to match the intent.
And perhaps we'll hear more from our last two folks to testify on this issue also. Co-Chair Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Jerry, the one other thing I'd just say following up on that, I think that the section you just read on 4A references the city and department must negotiate and enter into the agreement required by this section. The challenge is that language, the agreement required by this section, goes back to the same section Representative Smith referenced. So it's a it's a challenge. But I think my question was more, in general, I've not been a fan of bills that come in and say, you know, statewide land use policy, boom, we're going to apply something unique to this one specific site. Ironically, it was why I joined most of my Central Oregon legislative colleagues in opposing the Metolius bill, because it was a, you know, statewide land use planning, boom, only applicable to one site. Can you just talk about, I mean, you had several people express the intent that really this is the intent, this is not going to be the first, that's then going to be followed by the second and the third and the fourth. But can you just play that out a little bit more in terms of, because I'll confess I'm a little skeptical on that. Maybe nobody has a particular site in mind, and maybe it's in another part of the state. But if I'm a city or a county somewhere, and I see this pass, and I have a similar challenge with the TPR, with a piece of land, I'm going to call my representative, I think, and get him to draft a bill for next session. I mean, do you really not think there's much of a risk based on the way this has been defined to invite and encourage future legislation along those lines?
Co-Chair Benz, Representative Hunt, there probably is a risk, but I would say that the timing of this, we finished our work on the changes to the Oregon Highway Plan and the Transportation Planning Rule in the month of December. We're in the process right now. In fact, today, as a matter of fact, we're doing a web training for all of our staff about the changes to the TPR and the Oregon Highway Plan, and our expectations of how staff, and I think some of the DLCC staff are also going to be part of that training, how we're going to be doing our work in the future, whether we're talking about an update to a transportation system plan, whether we're talking about a development application. So I think that our staff expectations are just happening now. So there's a little bit of timing here. And I think, as you heard the mayor talk about, we're actually, I think, going to use this as a pilot about how does this structure the conversation based on the changes that have been made in the transportation planning rule and based on the changes that have been made in the Oregon Highway Plan about our mobility standards. So I think this... We'll learn from this, and it will inform our staff, and I think that we are fairly confident that with the changes we made in the TPR and the OHP, that we won't see this in the future, because the expectation is more of a negotiation with local governments about how we're going to address our transportation needs, and it's really the same conversation that we had with the city and with our sister agencies, and you heard from 1,000 Friends. So that expectation of communication and agreement was really kind of piloted with this legislation. So,
further questions to this panel? Sure, I have a couple. The going back to your reference to the agreement or earlier, where are we on the agreement that's called out in sub C 3C, right at the bottom of page 2? Is that agreement? It's the one that's supposed to be entered into.
Right.
Has that already pretty well been negotiated? Is it in place, or does it remain? Are things still there to be discussed?
So, Co-Chair Benz, the way this is set up is that the city is right now in the process of updating what they call their TIA, their Transportation Impact Analysis, and we've been working with the city to identify what needs to go in there. Once that work is complete, then we'll, and actually as the TIA has kind of worked, we'll get a sense of what needs to go into the agreement. And so that's why the language is here within 6 months that we will have the agreement. I think the need for the E in line 30 was really the city wants to make sure that it doesn't take an inordinate amount of time for us to reach this agreement, and that was kind of the safeguard for that. But we're committed to working this agreement through as quickly as we can. But the starting point is the finish of the TIA, which the city has just started.
That leads me to the kind of a comparison of processes. So under the new process that LCDC has worked out, if the 12-year, if that's what I heard correctly, process was to continue on parallel tracks with the one, Jerry, that you just outlined, who'd get done first?
Representative Benz, I don't know the answer to that because this don't know exactly all the pieces that it will take to go through this process that we're through the TPR. So
perhaps Matt or Bob could address that. I know it's new and new changes, but is it your anticipation that we'll shorten this 12-year time frame that we've been told about under the new rules? I'm being harsh, but I want to truly. We've had this discussion before, and that's why we have the changes. So maybe you can use this as a template and share with us how much more rapidly this particular situation could be resolved under our new rules.
Co-Chair Benz, certainly it would be less than 12 years. I think a lot of the analysis is going to be the very same analysis that you would do to address the agreement under this bill or to address the partial mitigation requirements that are in TPR Section 11, the new Section 11. So in many ways, if there were a race between the two, it would be sort of tied together, three-legged race, because they're relying on the same set of analysis and data to probably cross the finish line at about the same time. Hmm.
The discussion about the end or the or, where are the three of you on this? What should it be? Jerry, you first, because would you impose some sort of a restriction that gets to where Representative Smith is suggesting this document go in any event in the agreement? Or is this something that you think needs to be fixed? What's your thinking?
Representative, I think for clarity, the and would be beneficial. However, I do believe that with the language that we have, the commitment to do a TIA, and the language that we have with commitment to do an agreement, and the fact that you can't do, the TIA relies on what decisions you make here. I believe that the safeguard is there, that we have to have a basic understanding of how that land is going to develop in order to understand the transportation impacts. So the city will have to, as they're scoping out the TIA, make a determination of what the types of land uses they were anticipating.
Matt and Bob, did you have anything to add?
If we had the luxury, Co-Chair Benz, if we had the luxury of some more time, I think that we could structure that in a way that would be better. But given the cooperative and collaboration and given the other elements, this bill as it is here will work. We can get there with this bill.
And Jerry, back to you. I'm sorry, Bob.
I just wanted to add something on that and a little bit towards your previous discussion. Obviously, we can always make these pieces of legislation a little better, and I'm agree that that we're at a point where we're comfortable with the commitment we have with the city. But I did want to get back to why are we having this bill at all, and just remind you that we really just finished these major amendments to the TPR, and we believe there's a lot of new flexibility in the rules, but we understand that statewide, there's a lot of attention because I don't think that all the local governments out there are convinced of that or have learned about that or don't have some doubts about it. And so it's understandable that it's going to take us a couple of years of working those new provisions and demonstrating to the state that indeed this process works better now. We think it's much better. But in the interim, we might see some examples come forward where something that we did in the rule maybe inadvertently doesn't take care of every situation. I think it's unavoidable that there's going to be some situations out there where, despite of all our efforts, the amended rules don't quite resolve all the issues.
I'm sure of that. I'm sure of it. But I appreciate the effort that everybody's making to move this process forward or design it better. Further questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. And we have two folks left, Doug and Linda.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Green, thank you for the opportunity to be here. That's what Mary Kyle referred to Representative Smith as Representative Green. I want to make two points on this, and I think that this bill is a good example of two very specific things. The first is that we have a land use system that, despite our best intentions, sometimes defies common sense. And it's also expensive, time-consuming, bureaucratic, and in this case, impossible to navigate. Remember that we have a large piece of property inside the city limits, contiguous to all services, with transportation systems that are not infringed upon in any way as far as traffic. I grew up in Redmond. I am in Redmond frequently. I'm on that stretch of highway. I have never seen more than about two cars in either direction. And as we sat there with Senator Beyer during our tour in November, there was about a five-minute period of time in the middle of the day where one truck and two cars drove by. So it is not as if this is a highly trafficked area. It's a little busier in the morning as people are coming in from Prineville and out towards Prineville, but it is a perfect location for industrial development. 25 years ago, when the city first started talking about good land use planning, they said we were going to put industrial and economic development property out by the airport, east of town. We were going to put residential north of town and west of town. And the city, for 25 years, has followed those principles. So Redmond is a great example of good land use planning. So first example is, it's a good example of how our land use process doesn't work, even when it's common sense. This used to be industrial. It got changed for one specific purpose. It ought to be easy to move it back to industrial if nothing else has changed. And the city has spent 11 years and who knows how many $100,000 applying twice to redo the zoning and has been unable to do so. The second point, I think, refers to Representative Hunt's comment, which is there is an appropriate role for the legislature to step in from time to time in site-specific cases. And I've been here since 1997, and I can't tell you how many site-specific bills there have been. Every session there's one or two, sometimes on land use, sometimes on water issues, sometimes on transportation. There's plenty of site-specific examples of earmarks in the budget every year. So occasionally, I think it's very appropriate for the legislature to step in and say, we have a process that hasn't worked. We have an opportunity here for jobs or economic development that makes sense. There's a time crisis or a time crunch. It's appropriate, and that's part of your natural, normal, reasonable role. So I think it's entirely appropriate. I think what needs to be addressed here, and I'll get to some of the questions that were asked earlier, but one of the things I think that needs to be addressed is that we are in an economic crisis, not only in the entire state, but in Central Oregon in particular. This site is out towards Crook County. Crook County's official unemployment rate is 15.9%. The functional unemployment in Crook County, I heard last fall, was over 25%. One in four working adults in Crook County is unable to find a job. In Deschutes County, the unemployment rate is 12.5%. Functional unemployment is probably up around 18%. Jefferson County, just to the north, unemployment is over 14%. So functional unemployment is probably 21, 22%. We're talking about an economic crisis where almost a quarter of working Central Oregonians have no jobs. So we, right here in this area, we have a very large site, again, inside city limits, inside the UGB, served by services, not prime farmland, a good opportunity. The mayor was asked the question about the three previous economic opportunity job opportunities. My understanding is that those three employers might have brought between 400 and 750 jobs, if I recall correctly. Those are jobs that we're not able to capitalize on. The current employers interested in that site is between 600 and 1,000 jobs. So I would argue in Central Oregon, 600 to 1,000 jobs just in the everyday operation, plus all the construction jobs and the building trades and everything else, makes this a perfect opportunity. I do want to get to a section of the bill, and if I could borrow from Linda the bill. If you turn to the question of the or the and, I let me give you my interpretation. So if you turn to page 2, lines 35 through 37, I think B and C are saying exactly the same thing. And I think this is an example of very good land use planning. When you have the testimony of the departments, you have the testimony of the city. B is saying that what we're trying to do at the site is not have large-scale retail or commercial activities. So not large scale. We are allowing some small retail, like a Subway sandwich shop or a gas station. And we're doing that specifically because we know in good land use planning that if you don't put it someplace close to where you have a lot of jobs, people will get in their car, and they'll drive someplace else. And in this case, in Redmond's case, you're at the south end of the parkway. The parkway comes back into Highway 97, almost at that exact point. You're sending people back onto 97 where there is no bypass, and that is a section of road which is very heavily traveled. So we don't want to send large amounts of people either to the site with large-scale retail commercial or away from the site during the day because we have no small retail shops that meet the needs of those employees. So that's the purpose of B. C, I think, is trying to do the same thing, which is we're trying to help contain overall trips within the site. So we're in both cases, what A and B are trying to do is limit traffic. And that's what the city has said very clearly in all the discussions, all the negotiations. We're trying to limit the amount of traffic that is either leaving the site or going into the site. We're trying to limit going into the site to the people who are working there. We're trying to limit going off the site to the people who already are there, and they don't have to leave to go get a sandwich or a burger or fill their car up with gas. And so if they're coming in from Prineville, from Cook County, they have a job at the site. They come there, they work there, they get their lunch, they turn around, they go back to Prineville. They don't have to go into Redmond and onto Highway 97 and further congest that stretch of Highway 97. And B is the same thing. B is helping contain overall trips, which is a part of what's going to be in the TIA and is a part of what the city is intending to do. So I think that, in my mind, it could be and or it could be or, but both A and B are expressing the same thought, the same concept, the same goal in this bill. And I think there are other sections that the department pointed out, that Representative Nathanson pointed out, that make it very clear what we're trying to do with the site. We've got an opportunity for 50, 75, 100, 200-acre industrial sites. The city is trying to place employment opportunities there, which will create jobs to alleviate the economic crisis, and they're trying to limit the impact on what, in my mind, isn't a very overburdened transportation system anyway. I think this is a very good bill. It's a thoughtful bill. It's an appropriate role for the legislature to undertake from time to time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. You've heard how unique of a site this is. We ought to be doing backflips in order to get this site rezoned and used for industrial purposes in the state. Certainly, that's been the focal point of direction from legislative process over the course of the last couple of years and the executive branch. This is very unique to have a site inside city limits that's this size, that's currently served by water and sewer. I can't say enough about the value of this site and the circumstances. In terms of the bill, I think there's not what's not to like about this bill in terms of what it directs. There's time constraints. It puts a lot of fuel, a lot of fire, both under the city in terms of getting agreements with the department. You've heard from the department, both of them, that they are on board with making this work. There are time constraints in terms of the applicability of the bill. It goes away in January of 2015 if that doesn't occur. There are constraints on restrictions on the retail and commercial activities on the site. There are constraints in terms of protecting the site in size of one parcel that needs to be used for industrial or traded sector use, employment use. There's been some questions about a single site bill, and I wanted to talk just a little bit about some of the legislative programs that we've seen occur over the course of the last few years, the bills that have occurred, and why this particular situation in Redmond probably falls outside the parameters of all those programs. You've passed House Bill 3379. Several sessions ago. We've had the TPR revisions, and you've passed also Senate Bill 766. And without getting too deep into the weeds, what this bill provides the city is basically a buy on doing a significant effect analysis in terms of the TPR. And because of the nature, both of the agencies did some very good work this last year with the TPR rule revisions and the revisions to the Oregon Highway Plan. But
most of the revisions to the TPR itself are fairly narrow. They're fairly constricted. The opportunity to have an exemption from the significant effect analysis contained within the new transportation planning rule, because of the way it is written, will probably only apply to about 20 to 25 cities of the 242 cities within the state. Redmond probably falls outside of qualifying for that exemption within the TPR. There's another piece of the new TPR that would allow partial mitigation for economic development parcels and uses. That process is fairly lengthy. It's fairly rich in terms of process, procedure, and time is very, very important to the city of Redmond right now. So within the parameters of the TPR revisions, from a local government perspective, we certainly would have liked to seen them be a bit broader and less, with less discretion towards the from the agencies. We hear and we are very hopeful that the agencies will provide that discretion with appropriate due diligence and working forward with local jurisdictions. We really don't know what the end result of that will be, probably not for a period of time. Again, I don't think that the TPR revisions or certainly the passage of 766 that would have applied either to specific projects or areas of statewide significance for industrial areas within the state really would have effectively taken care of Redmond's concerns. Certainly would have not have given them a buy on that significant effect analysis. And we've done good work in terms of the legislature, in terms of the programs, and the agencies have as well. But there are going to be situations, very, very, very valuable situations, that are not going to fall within the parameters and the context of what has been passed today. So I would hope that you would support this bill as it sits. We certainly do. We think it's important. We think it's appropriate. We think it's very much in line with the state direction and focus that we've heard from the legislature.
Thank you, Linda. Questions for this panel? See none.
Mr. Chairman, if I may ask that on behalf of the Economic Development for Central Oregon that I submit their written testimony for the record, and they, what I'd like to point out when I pass this in is the broad variety of members of their board of directors, and they all support the bill. So I'll just turn that in for written testimony.
Thank you.
We do actually have that at our
oh, you have it? Okay.
This one you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you. I think we're going to go into a about a 4-minute recess. You were back in order.
Of course, that was all.
All right, I'm going to close the.
I totally appreciate that.
Where's my bill number?
1544.
Public hearing on SB 1544A and open a work session on 1544A. Co-chair Hunt.
There are no amendments to this, so Mr. Co-chair, I move Senate Bill 1544A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
It's been moved that Senate Bill 1544A go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes.
I think I will, and with respect to the good testimony that was made and the and I think the valuable efforts of the bill, I think I will be a no, and really appreciate your comments that B or C might be interchangeable. Still, according to my reading, if it was, as long as activity was necessary to support the planned employment uses, according to my reading, neither B nor C would need to be true, which seems to be an exception through which I could drive a truck or, you know, several Walmarts. So I'll be a no, but understand and appreciate the value of moving the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I enjoyed the conversation today and recognize strong arguments on both sides in terms of the critical needs in that part of the state, indeed in the whole state, for economic development, and the importance for us to take advantage of opportunities that exist. I'm also mindful of and persuaded by the arguments that we should be careful about where we are jumping into specific situations and where that leads. But I'm comfortable with the cautious support of the bill on my own part, based on the idea that we're using it very specifically to support the promotion of jobs and through industrial development. But I want to make sure that we're using the utmost caution to stick to the intent of this bill and not to go beyond it.
Thank you, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was walking around Walmart picking up some poster board the other day. I just got to thinking that it's a shame that we've gotten to the place where cities cannot have to come to us to beg for economic development. And I think it should give us pause to look at what we can do to help cities decide how they want to design and build things themselves and get it to where ODOT and our land use planning system would be working with them to help the development go forward and not slow down the progress. And I'll be supporting this bill, and I'm glad that the city of Redmond has fought so hard for it, and I hope we can look at this to expand it to some of our other cities so they can prosper and have activity, economic activity in them, so they're not slowed down or hindered by our land use planning or ODOT, and we're more supportive as a state in supporting them in economic development.
Further comments, further discussion? Well, just a couple of things. First of all, I wanted to thank the city and ODOT and LCDC for working so hard to put this together. This is reflective of an approach necessitated by a planning process that is many times necessary, but many times extremely counterproductive, in the sense that it hopes for something that we all want, yet it prevents something that we need more, and that would be jobs. And so I'm, of course, supportive of this bill. And seeing no further discussion.
Two very short things. I want to be clear for the record. My concerns aren't limited to word choice. I do have a broader concern, and at the same time, I appreciate the motivations in favor and want to at least state right now that I want to reserve my right to vote yes on the floor, which I know we always have anyway.
Thank you, Representative.
People seem to say it sometimes.
With that, with the seeing no further discussion, would the clerk call the roll?
Representative Lindsay?
Excused.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Widener?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Reed?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Co-Chair Hunt?
No.
And Co-Chair Vince?
Aye. The motion, or excuse me, the bill passes. We're going to need a carrier. Do we have a
Representative Wisnett?
Okay, Representative Wisnett will carry. And with that, seeing nothing further, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1544A. Is that correct? Yes, it is. Anything further, Patrick?
No, Mr. Chair.
With that, we're adjourned.
I keep thinking.